Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-T. Live from Indianapolis, site of Oregon State and Houston in the Elite Eight, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, round by round, Oregon State has advanced to this tournament, and you've had an opportunity to meet Loyola Chicago and Oklahoma State and Tennessee, and if you're a Duck fan, you had a chance to be reunited with USC last night at Bankers Life Fieldhouse as the Ducks were knocked out of the tournament. I'm in Indianapolis doing this radio show. I can see out the window here, Lucas Oil Stadium. Fine sports columnist from the Houston Chronicle, Brian T. Smith, friend of this show, man of the world, joining us now. Smith, how's your day going?
I'm just waiting for tip-off, John. I don't know why I'm so antsy. I feel like I'm playing tonight or something like that. This day is taking forever. I'm ready to go.
What does it feel like for you? Because like I was struck when I got here by the police escorted buses, but there's no traffic. Like there's some weird stuff that's happening, isn't there?
Yeah, I think it's the end, hopefully, of the COVID haze. I've been to Indy 20 times. I've done the NFL Combine here, a ton of Texans Colts games. But it's just different right now, and There's really nobody here, it seems like, except for college basketball fans. But because it's not like you have 50,000 people in the stadium or 20,000 people in an arena, you might have 2,000. It's an odd vibe. I think Indy's done a really nice job putting it all together. It looks cool, but you've covered 100 big events. I've now covered 100 big events. You've maybe covered 1,000. It just doesn't feel the same. I think they've done a nice job, but it still feels like a COVID NCAA tournament.
These two teams, Houston and Oregon State, are 40 minutes away from a Final Four. I'm slapping my forehead thinking about it. Did Houston expect to be here? Is this not a surprise for Kelvin Sampson's team?
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Number one, they were ranked number 5 in the country a couple times. They've been in the top 10 for almost the entire season. They haven't lost a game since early February. They won 33 games a couple years ago. They should have made the Elite Eight 2 years ago. They've had some serious heartbreak in the tournament. Last-second losses to Michigan, last-minute loss to Kentucky a couple years ago. Last year, they would have been a Sweet 16, Elite Eight type of team, but you had the cancellation. And this is the best team Kelvin Sampson has had. Now, the problem for UH, and we'll find out tonight, how good they really are, is they don't have anybody single-handedly who's dominant. They are a true team, but they don't just win with defense. It's not like they slow the game down. They don't play ugly. They're just a very unique team that you don't really see in college basketball. They're more of a team that you would have seen from the 80s. I mean, they can shoot the three pretty well, but they don't rely on the three. They're not super up-tempo, but they excel at times in transition and the fast break. They're one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, in college basketball. They're one of the best rebounding teams in college basketball, offensively and defensively. They're very well coached, but they don't have the star who's going to be a lottery pick. And the University of Houston basketball program is still on the rise and still nationally trying to reclaim the relevance that they had from the early 80s. I mean, you're talking about 40 years right now. So I don't think nobody expected Oregon State to be here, but people who really know the game have respected this team for the last few years, but it's not like they're a big talking team, like, oh my gosh, how are they going to take down Gonzaga? It's more that they need to get to the Final Four, and they need to prove to everybody that they do belong here.
Brian T. Smith, columnist, Houston Chronicle. Kelvin Sampson, what's he like? What's he like to be around, interview, and what's he like as a leader?
Yeah, it's interesting because everything that I knew before was all the Indiana stuff and the phone calls and on and on. But Kelvin Sampson truly remade his career in the NBA as an assistant coach. And he was the defensive specialist for those Kevin McHale Rockets teams, which led to the Mike D'Antoni era and led to the peak of the modern Rockets. And Kelvin Sampson left in 2014. And that was his shot to get back into college basketball. But he didn't go to a blue blood. He didn't, you know, he didn't go to a program that he was guaranteed to be in the tournament every year. He chose, and you just don't see this anymore. He chose to rebuild a program. They had horrendous facilities. There was apathy, and he will, you know, honestly talk about this throughout the program, throughout the fan base. They were getting 1,000 people at a rundown gym. They have one of the best home court advantages in college basketball right now. They completely redid their facility. It only seats about 10,000, but they pack it, and it's loud as heck. So they went old school with their very modern facility, and Kelvin has excelled in finding the transfers, and he'll take 3 stars and turn them into 4s and turn them into 5s. His kids stay. His kids play their butt off for them, and I wrote about this in today's Houston Chronicle. He has truly created, and this can be, you know, overstated in college basketball, but he has truly created a family atmosphere. His son Kellen is their main assistant. His daughter Lauren handles their marketing. He's created a very unique situation here, and if they can make the Final Four and beat Oregon State, this will be the peak of everything he's been building for the last 7 seasons.
Where's the mind of the Houston fan right now? Because, you know, you worked in, you know, Oregon and in Southern Washington. You were at the Columbian covering the Blazers, doing a good job there. You know the Oregon State fan base. You know what Oregon State's history is, you know, in basketball. This is not like Houston playing Duke or Carolina or Louisville. This is Oregon State. Are the Houston fans already penciling them into the Final Four?
They're not. Just because this Houston team can be prone to weird moments in games. And we saw that against Cleveland State in the first round, number 15 seed. The first half was a mess, and they won by 31. We saw that at midway through Syracuse. Houston owned that game ultimately. Syracuse never led in that game. Houston won by 16 points. But it never felt like they were in true control. Look, I'll be very frank. Houston should win this game. Houston should win this game. They should be in the Final Four. And they put their stamp on this season. And they say, hey, we are one of the top 4 teams in the country. We were ranked number 5 for a reason. What Kelvin Sampson has done has been a total program turnaround. If they lose this game, though, it will bring back everything that Houston fans struggle with, to where it just doesn't feel like they are there. And so we're going to find out. It's going to be 40. You know, Oregon State will be the Cinderella in college basketball this season, and just an unbelievable story. For Houston, it's more about proving that they are legit. They are very, very close to being back. They got to win this game to prove it.
Does that create pressure? Let me just throw a scenario at you, because I think we're going to have a really defensive game. And I think possessions are going to matter. And I wonder if this game gets down to inside 5 minutes, Brian, if it's close or it's a one-possession game, if there's a little bit more pressure on Houston than Oregon State. What do you make of that?
I think that's completely valid. The thing that should bail UH out in this situation is that they have been here. They, you know, Kelvin Sampson had a pretty big screw-up in the NCAA tournament not that long ago. They were playing Kentucky, and the team had a letdown in the last couple of minutes. They should have gone farther their previous 2 seasons in the NCAA tournament before the cancellation. So the point being that a lot of these guys have been through it, and they were playing with the seniors before who had to deal with the pain and had to deal with the heartbreak. Kelvin's been through this a billion times. UH has the experience. They have the depth. They've been playing big games for the last 2 or 3 years for this program. So you're in that final 5 minutes. You're in an NFL stadium. You've been number 5 in the country. You win conference tournaments. You do all those things. You beat Syracuse. They should find a way to get through those nerves and that pressure and that tightness and actually use it to their advantage. But we'll find out. I have seen this team get tight at times. I could see it at the end of the first half against Syracuse, and all of a sudden, then they kick it back in again. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch. Does it turn into something that holds them back, or does it turn into something that's an advantage that allows them to find late separation against Oregon State?
Is this a hot Houston team or just a good Houston team?
It's both. I mean, they as I said, they have not lost since early February. They won 33 games just 2 years ago, and they have key players from that team that are on this team. Quentin Grimes will probably go in the first round of the draft. Jean Giroux will probably play in the NBA. They don't have anybody who's going to, you know, drop 30 on you and go crazy, and you're going to be, oh, my God. You know, they don't have a Cade Cunningham, and Oregon State took care of Cade Cunningham and Oklahoma State. And I've been really impressed by Oregon State. The first half against Loyola Chicago was horrible basketball. But they finished that game very, very well. They're well coached. They might have, you know, a couple more players in terms of star talent that have more upside than anybody on UH. But UH is 1-8. The defense, the rebounding, the coaching, the system that they run, they're very selfless. They truly don't care who scores, and they'll end up out-rebounding you by 15, easily winning the offensive boards. And they've been blowing teams out, John. You know, they haven't played the monsters of college basketball, but they'll win games sometimes 98-60. So this is a very, very good team that's also hot.
Brian T. Smith, columnist, Houston Chronicle, with us. Make sure you follow him on Twitter and read him on the Houston Chronicle website. I got to ask you about Deshaun Watson and the drama. Yeah. And what do you make of all that?
Well, it's going to sound odd to say that there's not enough information, but there's just not enough concrete information right now. I mean, what you basically have right now, John, and you know, the victims and the accusers, that's a whole different situation. That obviously has to be taken very, very seriously. And if what is alleged to have happened on any level happened, that's an entirely different story. The problem is, right now, this is being played out 100% in the media. And so, and you know, part of that, the anonymity, that's fine. That's how it's done. That's professional. That's the legal system. But what you basically have is you have, you know, the lawyer for the accusers, and now you have Watson's lawyer, and every day it's just a battle back and forth of denial and accusations and another lawsuit and another lawsuit. It's up to 19 civil lawsuits. There's still no criminal charges. And the last that has been reported is that the, you know, HPD still isn't investigating it. So the whole thing, the way it's played out, it's just kind of dragged out day by day with a little drop in the media. It's playing out on social media. So it doesn't mean that it's not true. And it doesn't mean that, you know, Watson might not end up being in very serious trouble if these allegations are true. And right now they're just allegations. But I've never seen anything like this play out this way for a franchise quarterback who had no previous reported issues. And everything's kind of being revealed on Instagram. It's a very, very weird situation.
You know, it reminds me of, I don't want to get political here, but it reminds me of kind of like around the election, how everybody was trying
it's
to
very
create
well said.
Scandal back and forth. It's almost a PR game. And I hate saying that, because if the allegations prove to be true, and you have to take them credibly, and the police should be following up on it, if they prove to be true, Deshaun Watson belongs in prison. And if they aren't true, you have an insidious case of a PR war that is being played out. And it really makes me shudder, because I think people's lives are getting roped into this. And you know, I wonder, you know, I saw a Sports Illustrated story today with another massage therapist who says, no, this is outrageous. You know, I worked with him and you know, nothing ever happened, and this can't be true. But I hate that it's playing out that way, and it's not being handled by investigators. What about the franchise, the Texans franchise? J.J. Watt leaves. Deshaun Watson presumably will no longer be there. What happens to that franchise in the next couple seasons?
Well, look, I've been, you know, reporting and writing about this team since 2015 now, and it's been 6 very long years. In the last year, they are the most dysfunctional team in pro sports, and we could spend an hour you know, getting into all of the disarray and all the dysfunction and all the chaos. And John, that was before the Deshaun Watson problem, which is a serious, serious problem. Nobody knows where this is going, if he, you know, when he'll be traded, if they'll be able to trade him, if there'll be a market for him. He could be suspended for half the season. He could be cleared, but if you're the Texans, you're right now, Tyrod Taylor is your quarterback, and you're staring at trying to get from 4-12 to 6-10. They don't have a first round pick. They don't have a second round pick. They have no way right now, theoretically, to find their next franchise quarterback. The whole thing was an absolute train wreck, disaster, dumpster fire before the Watson problem. You put this on top of that, they're not going to be relevant football-wise for 2 or 3 years at best unless they find a miracle way out of this.
Well put. Brian T. Smith, I will see you on press row at Lucas Oil Stadium. Masks on, 6 feet apart, but I'll give you a fist bump. We can have a chat there. I appreciate you making time for our audience.
Thanks for having me on, John. I'm looking forward to the game. Should be a lot of fun.
Rich stuff from Brian T. Smith of the Houston Chronicle. If you missed any of that, you're going to need to get the podcast. It gives you a primer. I can't decide if I feel better or worse about Oregon State's chances after that interview. I want to go around the room. Peter Sampson, do you feel better or worse about Oregon State's chances to win tonight and get to the Final Four after that interview?
I mean, man, he really sold me on Houston. I mean, I'm going to ride with the hot team here, don't get me wrong, but I mean, Kelvin Sampson's squad is balling.
I think Houston's due, but at the same time, I loved what Wayne Tinkle was saying about how they are switching up their defenses and keeping opponents guessing out of timeouts. I think he's really on to something right now. So, I mean, I wouldn't put it past the Beavers to get through this game tonight and move on to the Final Four. I would lean Houston, though, slightly.
I've been calling this a 50-50 in the last couple of days. People keep asking me what I think, and I've been calling it a 50-50. Because I do think this is going to be of the Elite Eight matchups. Like I think if you put UCLA against Oregon State, I think UCLA and Oregon State are both playing well. I think it would be very similar to their Pac-12 tournament game that came down to the wire. I think USC might be playing better than just about anybody right now. I kind of like this matchup though of the Elite Eight matchups for Oregon State, but because I do see it as kind of a coin toss, I think. Wayne Tinkle in Oregon State, keep an eye on the first 5 or 6 minutes of this game. I think if they can do what they did with other parts of the last, you know, 6 or 10 games that they've been in, they've won 9 of 10. I think if they can keep this game close early and they're in it, I mean, I like their guards. I like Ethan Thompson. I like Jared Lucas, and this tournament's made for guards. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be a close game. If you ask me to bet this game and I'm getting 8 points, I'm going to take the team getting 8 points in this game. But I saw a great stat from Nick Daschle of the Oregonian about sort of the time of possession the time spent leading in games during the tournament. Oregon State has played 120 minutes in this tournament. They have held the lead for 97 minutes and 55 seconds, almost 98 minutes out of the 120 they have been ahead. They have only trailed for 17 minutes and 44 seconds. They've got a double-digit margin of victory. It's not a hot team. It's just a good team, and they're running into another
game. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.